Coming up on today's Family.ie radio magazine.
Debt levels in this country are absolutely staggering, and no class of people has escaped. So from working class to unemployed, to the middle class, to the super wealthy, to the professional class, the debt levels are significant and, in my view, unsustainable.
Let's talk more about what to do when the solicitor's letters start piling up. And do you feel that there's just no way out? We'll hear more about that in a moment. And targets of bullying often do attempt to share with an authority, but many times they're just given dismissive comments.
The worst thing a parent could do is to minimize, you know, the negative impact that it was, oh, don't worry about that. And that's what a lot of dads do, and that's why the kids just shut up. Parents doesn't even know what the opposition is. It could be five big lads there, yes, ready to, you know, thump the daylights out of the child.
Let's talk more about what the authority in the theatre of bullying can do. And in our third segment today, how to not only talk to our daughters, but also how to walk alongside them through this mad, mad place called life.
The reason that young women are so sexually active so young is because we don't have any way of celebrating markers of womanhood. So we don't ever do anything that says you once were a girl and now you're a woman.
That's all ahead on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. I'm Ronan Johnston. What's this?
Despite repeated requests for payment, you have failed, refused, neglected to discharge this account. We have instructions to obtain judgment, and once obtained, remit the judgment to the sheriff for enforcement and to take whatever additional legal action is necessary. All additional legal costs incurred by our client in the enforcement of said judgment will also be your responsibility.
If any of that sounds familiar, you probably know the anxiety that comes when you receive a solicitor's letter. Michael Cullity of MABS described some of the stress that comes from being in debt, but chances are, if you found yourself now in legal trouble because of it, your stress level has gone up a few notches. Cormac O'Kelly is a solicitor, and he talks now with Stephen Carty about a few options you have.
Cormac, can you tell us a little bit about maybe some of the risks that people face if they don't address their debt properly?
Yes, well, it's certainly a sign of the times, I suppose, the collapse of the national economy and the international economy. Debt levels in this country are absolutely staggering, and no class of people has escaped. So from working class to unemployed, to the middle class, to the super wealthy, to the professional class, the debt levels are significant and, in my view, unsustainable. And I see a lot of it in my professional work, the effects debt can have on people. So for example, I had someone recently who had debt of maybe 10,000 unsecured debt, who was absolutely hysterical and was talking about having to possibly go bankrupt. I don't mean to diminish or minimize their difficulties or their woes, but over 10,000, I'm dealing with other people who have multitudes of that, in tens of millions of debt. But it's relative to the circumstances. Both people are in the exact same situation, in a cul-de-sac, and they see absolutely no way out. And I suppose when people come in to me, there's two things I say to people who are obviously very distressed, very upset. Nobody likes to be in a position where they can't pay their way and meet their bills. And the two things I say to people, at all costs, don't lose your peace and don't lose your health, because these things will pass. They will pass. And I suppose there's a fear of the unknown. People who have never been in these difficulties before have this fear of the unknown. Well, what happens if I go to court and they start getting threatening letters from a bank or a debt collector, and they're hysterical, they don't know what's going to happen. So I think it's crucial that people get professional advice. And I emphasize the word professional, because there's plenty of bar stool advice out there and people who will tell you this and that, and a friend of theirs this happened, or a neighbor of theirs did this. At least by getting professional advice, you know that the person who's advising you is properly accredited and there's some level of accountability, and you have a proper reference point if you need to go back to them. If you can't afford it, MABS do fantastic work in terms of helping people, or go to a solicitor if you have an existing relationship with a solicitor. Even if you can't pay, they'll give you 10 or 15 minutes of their time and at least put your mind at ease. But please get professional advice. And do not pay money to unregulated individuals who promised you the sun, moon and stars in terms of being able to sort out your problems. Go to someone who has proper recognition, as professionally qualified.
Let's say somebody is in distress and they actually have some threatening scenario that, you know, a third party, say a bank or whatever, has come to them. They now have to face those issues. What should they be doing?
I think it's important that people try and be as proactive as possible. So if someone's pursuing you for money, write back to them, engage with them, say, I don't have it. Do up a statement of your means. If you go onto the central bank website, it's a very helpful template, statement of financial affairs, which sets out all the various headings, and have one of them filled in and updated on a regular basis. So you're being absolutely transparent with somebody. You say to them, here's my detailed statement of all my income and expenditure. I'm taking in, for example, €1,000 a month. My outgoings are €1,200 a month. I can make no meaningful contribution to the monies I owe you. Now, very often they can go further. They can bring it to the district court, and your means can be examined and an installment order can be made. So, for example, you'll give a statement of your means and the court might say, well, look, you're taking in €1,000 a month and your outgoings are €600 a month. Surely you should be able to make a contribution of, say, €50 or €100 a month towards this debt. Again, that's if the debt is small. But if you're talking hundreds of thousands, again, it's immaterial. It's so small what you could contribute towards it. And I've certainly noticed that banks and creditors are getting more in tune with the reality on the ground. And they're kind of adopting an approach in some cases. They're just not bothering to pursue people because it's a waste of money and time. And again, also because of the scale of the problem. If this was 5 or 6 years ago, you'd be in isolation. But now, because this problem is so significant, they have to take a commercial view on this and say it's just not worth throwing good money after bad. And by keeping a sense of perspective, there's a kind of with a cliche, your health is your wealth. And it's so common and it's bandied around in this current climate. But it is so true. You have so much to be thankful for. And even this country, with all the giving out people do, we have a fantastic climate. We have no social unrest. We have political stability. Nobody goes hungry by choice. We have a very generous welfare state. So look at all the positives. And there's so many different courses there for people to retrain themselves, update their skills. You have to have a positive attitude. Otherwise, this will contaminate and pull you down. If you get so focused and so consumed on the problem and the debt, and if only you knew, you have to look beyond it. You can't wave a magic wand and hope it'll all go away. But by being proactive and trying to address it and deal with it, you'll move on and new opportunities will open for you.
That's comforting, isn't it? Even if our finances have dried up, our peace and hope doesn't have to. This is family.ie. If you have any questions or comments at any time for which you need a reply, feel free to email us radio@family.ie. Our text comment line is 086 251 6886. That's 086 251 6886 or radio@family.ie. We need to take a quick break right now, but coming up next.
In many cases, a serial bully is a sadist and they intend to harm other people. It is not an accident. In many cases, they have planned their attack ahead of time, and they would do more of it if courageous, compassionate people didn't stand in the gap.
We'll find out more about this after a quick break. So keep it tuned right here for more on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to our family.ie radio magazine. We turn now to another article. If someone is being targeted by a bully, a common piece of advice is to tell an authority. But that doesn't always happen. Why?
Because they might be scared that they're going to get beat up more if they tell.
They'll be afraid of being called a rat or being bullied more because of the fact they told somebody.
Maybe because they threatened them.
Fear of reprisal is a big thing, you know. So like a child would feel like they would get in trouble for telling that they were being picked on.
Then they would just get beat up.
They might like tell them if they told somebody that they beat them up or something like that, like again. They might not like to look weak.
A threat from a bully that they might tell somebody creates a lot of fear.
Afraid that they'll do something to you.
They might say they might hit you back or something. They could kill you.
Fear? Intimidation? For many targets of bullying, telling tales mightn't seem like the best option at all. But if you're a coach, a teacher, a parent, or any other authority figure, what can you do to make a safe environment to help provide freedom from bullying? We have an obligation to be on the lookout for the telltale signs that bullying is taking place. We'll hear more from Joy Cantwell-Moore and Isla Jeffers, the founders of Equip Ministry Ireland. But as Frank Peretti explained, for a target who feels all alone, even just one caring question from an authority figure can make a world of difference.
You know, all it took for me was the PE instructor. One day, he was a tough guy. Big guy, had the whistle. We were all afraid of him. One day, I don't know what brought it on, but he looked at me and he said, "Are you okay? You feeling all right?" Well, I didn't answer him. I didn't know what to say to him. But all it took was one moment of tenderness from a teacher. And I went to study hall and I started writing him a letter. And I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, page after page after page of the years of things I had endured and never said a word about. Listen, folks, you can see a bruise, you can see a cut, you can see weird, erratic behavior, but a wounded spirit is not entirely visible all the time. And if the children in that school are wounded in spirit, it's going to be tough for you to find out unless you are open and gentle and ready to listen to them. They have a story to tell you. And they're dying for someone to listen, but they feel trapped because this is school. I have to be here. I have to be in this class. I have to be in this room. I have to sit next to so-and-so. They don't want to be branded as the coward or the chicken because they want to get out of an unpleasant situation. Be sensitive to it.
The worst thing a parent could do is to minimize, you know, the negative impact that was, oh, don't worry about that. And that's what a lot of dads do. And that's why the kids just shut up. Go on, get in there to school and just give as good as you get. Sure, I just went in there and gave him a kick in the shins and sorted it all out. But parents can give out so much advice that actually is counterproductive and it just makes the child feel more inadequate. The parent doesn't even know what the opposition is. Could be five big lads there ready to, you know, thump the daylights out of the child.
What I would see a lot working both with parents and young people at times is that the instant a parent hears their child may have been bullied, they go into explosion mode, basically, where they start to freak out, think, oh, my child is so at risk and, you know, anything could happen. This could have been going on for so long and I've got to take action. They march into the school or they take dire action, basically. And the child is in trauma because that is why children are afraid to tell their parent or a teacher, because they do not want to be standing out, basically, as the one who ratted, if you like, and the one who now everybody knows about what's been going on. And they're going to, I suppose, have it worse the next day.
Another thing that these parents can do, too, is studies show that many targets of bullying, they don't have many friends before the bullying takes place. And they often don't smile that much before the bullying takes place. For whatever reason, there are people in this world who pick on people who might appear to be a little more somber, if not gloomy. And we need to coach them to appear differently to their peers.
So there are coping strategies, of course, then that parents could sit with their child, that they could sort of practice, you know, witticisms and just, I suppose, sort of simple, almost like a first aid kit that they could give the child just to see, you know, is it possible for the child to sort it out for themselves? So one, you would try to find out exactly what's going on.
We need to help our children forge more friendships, at least one friend, ideally three. There's something about the number three that really seems to ward off bullies, because they're also bullying more in groups than they have.
If you get nowhere with the child, I would always recommend that you search out parents of the child's friends. Somebody knows something. And if you get nowhere there, because a friend, an adult friend, could ask their child.
Yes.
And that could draw it out. Mm-hmm. And then you'd also go to the school, and hopefully you're in a school where a teacher is willing to have their eyes opened. Mm-hmm. And then they could quietly sort of just see what's going on.
Because they're afraid that they'll be picked on even more than they were before.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so unless it's dealt with properly, that will happen. Yeah. And they're dead right, you know. So I suppose for parents out there and for the young people maybe out there as well listening, you know, you need to talk about it in a calm way and you need to get the whole picture and you need to track it. You need to give it some time and then make your next moves. So it's really a bad idea to have a knee-jerk reaction.
There's no need to suddenly sort of manhandle almost the perpetrator, mm-hmm. but you can catch them in the act, so to speak, if you have some form of evidence that something is going on.
In many cases, a serial bully is a sadist, and they intend to harm other people. It is not an accident. In many cases, they have planned their attack ahead of time, and they would do more of it if courageous, compassionate people didn't stand in the gap.
That's well said, isn't it? Courage and compassion? I think that's definitely the key to finding freedom from bullying. If you have any questions or comments at any time for which you need a reply, feel free to email us radio@family.ie, or our text comment line is 086-251-6886. And again, that's 086-251-6886 or radio@family.ie. Coming up next.
My parents found it difficult to cope when I started to grow up. That was difficult for them. And it's as though we have this big embarrassment about girls becoming women. I've noted even amongst my peers, people who are in their 30s don't like to refer to themselves as women. They prefer the term girls. I don't know what that's about.
Stay tuned for the final segment of today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. Just a word of warning, we will be covering some mature topics today, so if you have much younger listeners around you, you may want to make sure that they're out of earshot. We talked a little bit about helping the young women in our lives to see their God-given value and make decisions based on more than just how they feel or how someone else makes them feel. Anne-Marie Miles will talk more with Claire Hargerton in just a moment. Right now, though, here's our director, Stephen Carty, along with our guest contributor, qualified life coach and youth worker, Mark Fennell.
I think that in the home, the parents are modelling for their sons and their daughters what it's like to be a man around a woman or a woman around a man. And it's great if parents are not prudish, you know, in their relationship with their children, and they're open and honest with them so that they can see lived out in front of them.
That's very true. I mean, that's the point as well, the emotional landscape that comes with, you know, sex and all that that you can get up to. I mean, that's the thing that is taught. Birds and bees are taught, but the emotional side is not taught. But yet that is really what needs to be taught into, because at the same time, that's the most devastating, and that affects everything else along with it. And how to have a good relationship is built off your emotional stability. You know, that affects the person you end up marrying as well, of course.
I think there's a lot of negativity around sexuality, women's sexuality in particular, A, in the home, B, in the media, and C, in the church. And I know that I made enough of my own mistakes navigating all that stuff. And I'm at the point now where I feel maybe we're asking the wrong questions about sexuality and sexual behaviour. And I think maybe approaching the subject more positively could be helpful. Striving to be chaste, or whatever you want to call it, it's very hard to find the right words for that. It's far more, it certainly was for me, about how deeply we love God and forming a virtuous character than it is at all about patterns of behaviour. And I really strongly feel that we can't manipulate young women or men into choosing the right thing. I had a few thoughts for you from the feminist Naomi Wolf. I don't know if you've ever heard of Naomi. She's written a few famous books like Promiscuities and The Beauty Myth. Really worth a read, really worth a read. And one of the things that she said in Promiscuities was that the reason that young women are so sexually active so young is because we don't have any way of celebrating markers of womanhood. So we don't ever do anything that says you once were a girl and now you're a woman. And she describes this example of how when a young girl started menstruating in this community, all the women, so her sisters, mothers and aunts and everybody connected to her, would take her down to the beach. And she would swim out a girl and she would swim back a woman. And from that point on, she knew who she was in that community, you know. And we have nothing in our culture that ever marks that. Equally, we don't have a whole lot going on for men. I think as well, my parents found it difficult to cope when I started to grow up. You know, when I stopped being like a little girl and started being like a young woman, that was difficult for them. And it's as though we have this big embarrassment about girls becoming women. I've noted even amongst my peers, people who are in their 30s don't like to refer to themselves as women. They prefer girls. Mm-hmm. They prefer the term girls. I don't know what that's about. But like I say, it's as though we have an embarrassment about becoming women. And I think sometimes parents take an attitude of needing to manage the sexuality of their daughters instead of celebrating it. You know, and for us as Christians, we view burgeoning sexuality in a young person as a miracle of God's creation. Mm-hmm. It's like full of the fruit of promises of wonderful things to come, you know. And as far as Christian parents are concerned, nurturing a godly heart in their children, not by telling them what to do, but by being godly towards mm-hmm. them. My own understanding of God is that God is so tender and merciful. And I think no amount of censorship or strict boundaries will shape a young person's heart, but tender and love and mercy, these things will. It's not necessarily going to shape their behavior, but it could shape their whole lives. Mm-hmm. It could shape, you know, the color of who they're going to become if they're willing to accept that tenderness and that love. Mm-hmm. And I really wish that I had had a woman talk frankly and openly with me about the goodness and beauty of my own body and sexuality, mm-hmm. and about developing a heart and a character that was orientated towards God. I think parents need to be the safest place in the world for their kids. Mm-hmm. I was actually a pretty good kid, but it's like our modus operandi is suspicion. Why are we suspicious? Because we were young people and we knew that we were going to do whatever we wanted to do. But maybe we would have behaved differently if we had been trusted. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, you know, we've said before, neither of us are parents. Mm-hmm. We're not in any position to tell parents how they should raise their daughters. But we do remember being daughters.
Yeah.
You know, Christian teenagers are having sex.
Yeah.
They are. And because they have sexual desire, mm-hmm. they're having sex because they want to be known and to know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good that we're having this conversation to open it up. And I don't think we're saying anything new or novel, but maybe it's just that there are always around us young people with burgeoning sexualities who don't know how to manage it. Mm-hmm. We didn't know how to manage it either.
Yeah.
So maybe even just having a space where we say, no, none of us know what we're doing, but let's stay close to one another and see how we get on.
I would love to think that even as we discuss these things, that parents would start to feel, I believe that I can steer my child because of the way I communicate with them. They know I'm for them, so they know the advice or the instruction or whatever I'm giving them is for them. And I suppose that is really part of what we want to do in these programs, isn't it? Is equip parents and give them confidence to say, yes, I can steer my child through this mad kind of, you know, loud, noisy, colourful road that our daughters are navigating their way through, you know.
The research also shows that where parents do engage with their children, even in their middle teen years, when they're much more influenced by their peers, they actually listen even though they appear not to be. And therefore, we should take our courage in our hands.
Mm. Absolutely.
This is family.ie. If you have any questions or comments at any time for which you need a reply, feel free to email us radio@family.ie, or our text comment line is 086-251-6886. That's 086-251-6886, or radio@family.ie. For copies of this audio series and many others, free to listen to or download for later, we hope you'll head over to family.ie. You'll also find many helpful links and resources for every member of your family. If you can't find what you're looking for, contact us. We're honoured to help in any way we can. Again, that's family.ie. All of the features and programs you've heard about today simply would not be possible without the generosity of our supporters. So a big thanks to you for helping us as we help strengthen individuals and families throughout Ireland. So until next time, on behalf of Stephen Carty and our entire team, I'm Ronan Johnston. Slán go fóill. Thank you for listening to family.ie.